Today is the day to wake, work, and win. Welcome to The Standard. I'll show you some stuff before you leave because we'll give you a lecture or something. But like, we rebranded last year and called it The Standard. And it's just more just like, you know, hold the bar high. Yeah. Don't lower it. You know, don't accept mediocrity. And this is kind of what you see. Like, we've gone from a basement to a little room to now here. And we're thinking
about to start at your kitchen table.
That is true. Yeah. I know nothing about podcasts, man. It's just all YouTube.
That's how a lot of people start off, those something like that, like a kitchen table, or if they're, I've seen a lot of podcasts that a buddy of mine has one back home, and kind of the same thing with him. He was like, started off with like just his iPhone, you know, he was recording at his kitchen
table. Well, that was probably better than what I had, because I had this cheap ass Dell, which he made fun of me for years. I had this like $120 Dell that was slow as shit. And I was using this program that would mix everything together without actually having a mixer. It worked, but
yeah, I mean, it's a lot of downloads. I mean, it wasn't nothing.
Yeah. So I don't know. Anyways, yeah, rebranded it as a standard, and now it's just me and him. The other guy took the other brand his own way, and I mean, it's doing well. I mean, like, we enjoy this. But there's a vision. Like, I want to see how big it goes. I mean, we're, you know, like, we wouldn't be doing it if there wasn't some sort of feedback that was positive. And,
right,
you know, we, based on normal podcast statistics, like in the first month, we fall within like the top 7 to 10% of podcasts. So, but there's tons of pod, like, you look at 5% to 10%, and there's a ton of podcasts in there. The top 1% are like Rogan, you know, right. So there's a big jump.
Yeah.
But it still is at least worth our time.
Yeah, we're trying to make it fun, and I think the reason Fits by Fire did not keep our interest is because, you know, like, you talk to enough cops, you kind of hear the same stories, you kind of get the same vibe, and it's like, we just want to talk to interesting people that inspire others to, like, live a better life. And this shit takes, like, a lot of time, so we also want to talk to people who we like,
right.
We like to hang out with, and we don't necessarily want to just keep talking to the same chiefs about how to get buy-in and how to keep people engaged. I mean, that it's pretty easy, to be honest with you. Like, I don't know why it's so hard for leaders to get it right, but it seems like it's pretty easy.
Yeah, I wanted the same thing. You know, it's like, you find them here and there, but they're few and far between as far as leaders that get it right and probably truly understand everything that's involved in all this. But
I mean, you've changed jobs quite a few times. Like, what have you noticed that when the leadership is doing it right, like, what are some your cornerstone big pieces?
I think one of the biggest things that, at least in my mind, is the support that they give you, and not just you, but obviously the whole organization. And there's a difference between supporting somebody and, you know, letting them or not letting them do what they want to do and how they want to do it, right? There's still standards. There's still, you know, policies, procedures, and stuff like that you have to follow, but still supporting them at the same time, understanding. It's kind of like raising a child, right? I mean, when people do good, you praise them, and when people do bad, you have to discipline them, but then it's over with. It's like, all right, cool, next.
Yeah, I mean, for a child, you know, I still love you. Or for a coworker, it's like, hey, I'm still in your corner.
Right.
We just can't do it that way. Instead of, I don't give a shit what you do. Like, I'm going this way, and I'm going to step on you to get there.
Yeah. And, you know, not everybody's going to see it the same as far as maybe your guys' perspective as well, but at least mine is, you know, it's truly like a family, you know, and so you kind of treat it as such. Granted, it's not a family.
Yeah.
You know, blood family, but you still treat things a lot of things with involved in it as such. You know, you have each other's backs. You identify the things that are good, identify things that are bad. You work on them, you address them, and usually that ends up paying off in the long run. Because most people, most, not everybody. There's always, in every group, there's always the bad apples, the dummies that just don't quite get it, and those guys end up having to be let go or fired or whatever. But most people learn from it, and they also then look back and go, I appreciated that. You know, that's what helped me grow as...
Appreciated the kick in the ass.
Right, yeah. You know, helped me grow and get better as not only a person, even at, you know, the adult age, but also as a professional and whatever, you know, profession you're in, whether it be policing, you know, fire, whatever. So
yeah, but I think that family and that trust is so much more important as a, especially in your case, as a cop. Lives are on the line, man.
Yeah.
And as, you know, some of the places you've worked, I mean, it's happened.
Yeah.
You know, it's a daily thing where you're have the chance to get shot at and you're depending on people to have your back. If they don't do, you know, the things to prove it to you and you don't trust them, it's a bad relationship.
Yeah. And it's not just on the street level too. It's, again, it's all the way up, because if you're afraid of what you may or may not be doing, based on not wanting to get in trouble or having to always look over your shoulder to figure out, well, is this particular person who's, you know, higher rank than me, that's constantly just looking, and who knows if they actually do it or not, but it sure does have the appearance that certain supervisors, from your first line supervisors all the way up to the top, at some points, you know, during your careers, it tends to appear that some people just have it out for certain people. Sometimes that's self-inflicted. But sometimes it's not. You know, some people are just like that. They just look for ways that they can do certain things so that they can, at least in the people higher than them, you know, they tend to want to appease them.
Yeah.
You know, that's their way of saying, hey, look what I'm doing. Look at me. You know, so that they get the next spot.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So then, when did you start as a cop?
2004.
All right, so you're coming up on 18, 20 years.
Yeah.
So how has it changed? And what I'm talking about is more of, obviously, the last 5, 6 years. What's it like being a cop now? You know, I mean, you see in the media all the pressure that's on you guys.
Yeah.
And there's definitely people out there that still support you. And there are definitely people out there that, like, you can't do anything right. But from our point of view, like, you know, we work alongside cops every day, and it seems like their hands are tied on a lot of stuff. And then, and it's just like, now people, a lot of things that used to be enforced, it's just like free reign for some citizens, you know?
Yeah. No, that's, I mean, you've pretty much hit the nail on the head there.
This episode is brought to you by us, more importantly, our Patreon. And most importantly, our Patreon members. If you like what you're hearing, think about joining us. Head on over to the-standard.us, and for as little as $3 a month, you can get extra episodes, discounts on gear, monthly conference calls. So head on over to our site at the-standard.us. And remember to always like and subscribe. Back to the show.
It's, like you said, the last probably... I'd say, like you said, probably 5 years or so, it's took a tremendous turn in the wrong way, in my opinion. I mean, obviously, there are certain things throughout the years, just like any profession, I guess, you know, things evolve, whether it be technology, in our case, you know, tactics, you know, different ways of doing things. You learn over the years. You know, you look back to the 70s, 80s, and 90s, you know, policing back then. I mean, man, if you did some of the things you did back then, now, I mean, it's bad news.
Like, yeah.
You know, you're
like, what?
You're looking to jail time. I mean, just some of the things that were standard, that were normal, that were accepted back then. I mean, they're so far gone, and you can't do those things anymore. And
you think that the police service is worse off because you can't do those things anymore? And I guess what I'm imagining is in my head is that when we have people that we're like, man, we need the cops here because they're gonna start fighting with us, we want the cops to come in and go hands-on right away, and it seems like that has been taken away, but do you think that anything is better because of that?
I mean, obviously, in certain aspects, and on our side, I think that it is, because there were things that, even when I first started in 04, some of the things that I learned and that I was taught, like I said, it was normal. It was acceptable back then. But looking back on it, you're like,
right,
you know, probably shouldn't have been doing some of those things, right? And in that aspect, it is better because it's the right thing to do now. But and like you guys, like, you know, we noticed that too. We're like, you know, guys who are hesitant to jump in and help you guys, or, you know, and even if it's not a firefighter, maybe it's just a regular civilian. It's like,
yeah.
You kind of start second guessing, like, is this okay? Or can I do this? Or should I do this first as opposed to trying to do something else first and then go into that? You know, are they going to view that as, you know, well, you should have took these three steps first before you went there? Whereas used to, you could just jump right in and nobody say anything about it.
Yeah, I think it took the instinct out of it. You know, the instinct is to help people that need help.
Absolutely.
You know, and now it's like, ooh, what if I do that, it could lead to that. If I do that, it could lead to that. And that's time, that's seconds there, and turning out to be critical for some situations.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
And it affects you guys just as much as it does the general public, you know. So in some aspects, it was good. But in others, I think it's completely bad and or inefficient. It also puts people's lives at risk, including you guys, because you guys see it just as much as we do, but you're dealing with people who are, you know, having a mental breakdown, you know, on drugs, you know, whatever the issue is, they're not normal at the time, right?
Right.
So those people they're just as dangerous as any, you know, murderer or anything like that out there that has the intent, even though they may not had the intent at the time. It's just, you know, the mindset, whatever is going on with their bodies or brains or whatever at the time. It's just, you don't know what they're going to do. So the best way, at least in my opinion, is to hit it hard, hit it fast, and be done with it. That way there is no chance for something else to happen, and then it continues to kind of get them going, you know, and then something else happens, and then they start seeing, oh, well, I can get away with this.
Yeah,
I'm going to keep pushing the limits, pushing it, pushing it, pushing it. Before you know, you're in this grandiose, you know,
scene,
and you're like, and then now you're trying to catch up. You're trying to come from behind and be like, well, you could have ended that in the very beginning had you still had, I wouldn't say the mindset, but like if people would have just not been scared or been told to do this.
Well, and it goes back to what you're saying. Where is your support if you make that move?
Right.
You know, if you make a move out of good faith of like, this is what I think is the right thing and I'm safest for everybody here. Well, do you have somebody above you who's going to look at something and Monday morning quarterback it and say, right. Yeah, no, he shouldn't have done that. It's like, whoa, 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 whoa. What could have happened if I didn't do it and you weren't there? You know, and that's what we're seeing.
Yep.
A lot these days is in the media is just quarterbacking everything. That's frustrating.
Yeah, and that's obviously one of the biggest issues is the media. You know, I wouldn't say play the puppet master role, but in a sense they do.
You got to get viewers.
Yeah, and it's you know, obviously it's hard for me because, I mean, I'm on social media, and I try to stay away from, you know, posting or saying certain things. And, you know, but there's obviously times where you see certain things in the, whether it be a news article, a video, even random people just posting stuff because of what they saw. You know, it's so far from the truth, but yet it's become the truth.
It becomes the truth.
To them.
Yeah.
You know, and because it just keeps getting pushed out and pushed out and pushed out that this is what how it is, this is what's going on. It's just like, oh, that must be how it is. And it's like, come see it from our point of view.
Right.
Come see it from our end. And I guarantee your mind will be changed. And I tell people that all the time. I'm like, do ride-alongs. Go sit in the courthouses. You know, go sit in these trials and see how the courts, you know, handle certain cases and how many times people just get slaps on the wrist over and over and over. And these are people who are career criminals, people who, I mean, are constantly within in the court system. But they get out and they go do it again. They come back, slap on the wrist, and we deal with them over and over and over again. And
they're professional criminals.
Yeah.
I mean, and they're good at it.
And because they keep getting out, nothing happens to them. They just keep doing it.
Yeah, we were talking this morning, actually, around the table. One of our guys got into a physical altercation with, I wasn't there, but, you know, that's not a rare thing for where we work. And he's going to go and pursue legal action against this person. And one of the other people at the firehouse was like, dude, you're wasting your time. Because they're going to go in there and say, you took away their capability to make medical choices. Like, they clearly were not of sound mind and body, and it's going to get thrown out. So, like, why are you wasting your time? It was such a, like, defeating, like, oh, man, we really don't have any recourse, do we? It's like a, these guys get to do whatever they want.
Well, I wonder, too, though, because I mean, my mindset is, because we get the same thing. It's like, do you keep, you go after people who assault us and, you know, individually, because you know there's times where even the courts, they with us being the victim, they ask us, hey, what do you want out of this, you know, so we can kind of,
yeah, that's interesting. I'll stop you right, because so one of the only other cop we've had on the show was my brother-in-law Corey Sack, and he was that Cherry Hills cop that got shot in that home invasion.
Yep.
And he was going through, I think this was just within the last year, you know, they were going through the sentencing of the main shooter, and they asked him, hey, what do you want out of this? And I guess the dude's street name was like 44 or something. It's like 44 years. And the judge was like, okay. I thought that was, you know, I mean, it's attempted murder, man. I mean, it's like bullet inch left or the right or something, he bleeds out. I mean, you got a dead cop who is now orphaned his kids, you know? So it's like 44 years, that's fair, you know, but I didn't know that really. I mean, I think there's a relationship there between the courts and the police, for sure, but I thought that was kind of a cool thing. I mean,
he wished his nickname was One. 6 months.
So, yeah, 30 day.
Well, I mean, it's definitely a thing, and I think that's also something that they do for most victims, at least from my understanding, is that they go to them and say, hey, you're the victim. How would you like for us to proceed in this whole thing? Like, do you want us to go, you know, as hard as we can? Do you want to cut them a break, you know, make some kind of plea deal with them? Or do you want to drop the charges? I mean, how is it that you want to proceed? And usually they will try to, at least they give the appearance that they're trying to do what you want as the victim,
yeah,
which I can appreciate. But at the same time, I still think there should be somewhat of a standard, you know, if the victim is saying, hey, you know, however you want to handle it, or, you know, I'm not too worried about it, there should be a standard of, okay, well, based on your history or based on, you know, the actual crime or crimes itself, you know, we're at minimum going to push for this. Instead of just saying, oh, well, here you go, slap on the wrist, you're free to go again the next time, which will be the next day.
Yeah. How long have you been doing canine for?
Well, I only did it for about 4 years in Aurora. I'm not in K9 currently.
Miss it?
Oh, yeah.
What do you do with your dog?
The dog that I have, so my first dog in Aurora, he died of a brain disease. Oof. At 5 years old. So I only had him for a couple of years after I got him from another handler. And then my second dog, I still have him, but we had to take him offline because he had some particular drives that weren't the correct drives for the police work. So he wouldn't actually engage in a fight.
We got some of those guys.
You what?
We have some of those guys too who don't have the right keys.
They don't want to engage?
Yeah.
He would go down range, but then when it came time to actually, you know, put teeth on somebody, he wouldn't. He would do other things. So basically, his defense drive would come out. It would supersede all the other drives that every dog has the same drives and traits, but some have higher ones than others. And in certain cases, whether it be stress or unfamiliarity or something different about a certain situation, can bring out certain other drives. Well, unfortunately, with him under stressful situations or when he got into a particular scenario, his defense drive took over, and he wouldn't engage because he didn't want to actually bring the fight to somebody. He would just kind of be there and be like standoffish, like don't come towards me. If you do, I might bite you. I don't want to fight, but I will if I have to. And
did he have it at one point and lost it, or
probably not? That's usually drives and traits are something they're born with. It's like genetic stuff. In my mind, it's like us. Like certain people have that mentality and that will and that, you know, whatever that is inside of us that goes, hey, we're gonna go towards the bad stuff instead of going away. In his mind, he's going away because he wants to survive.
So you got to keep him?
Yeah. Well, yes.
Yeah. That doesn't usually happen, right?
It does. Okay. Usually, once a dog is retired, even though he wasn't officially retired, usually once they're retired, they'll let you buy the dog back from them for like a dollar.
Yeah.
And super cheap. And then you get to keep him for the remainder of their life.
What type
of dog?
Is this German Shepherd or is this?
Belgian Malinois.
Okay.
Oh, man. Those are like little fur missiles.
he'll be six this year. But
how does that work when, like those working dogs who had a purpose and now they no longer do? I mean, how does that jack with their psychology?
You think there's like this inner community of retired dogs and it's like, oh yeah, look at Marty over there. He's gained like 50 pounds. He won't even come to the gym anymore.
Right.
Well, I mean, I know that especially for like working dogs like Malinois, we got a guy on our job who has a Malinois and he used, I don't think it was that specific dog in the military, but the same breed.
Mm-hmm.
And if that dog isn't training every day, doing something, he absolutely destroys this dude's house.
Yeah, and you that's essentially what happens. Even when they're retired, so they'll be, usually most places will work their dogs and, until they're about 10 to 12-ish. Sometimes that varies, depends upon genetics and stuff like that. And dogs that tend to be in a slower place, they're working life is longer, so a lot of times that means their health and stuff like that ends up being better when they're done because they didn't have the deployments and the things like, it's just like an athlete,
yeah.
A lot of times you just, if you don't wear yourself down, you actually live longer and can go longer and stuff like that. But I mean, that's essentially what it is. If they don't have something to do, they will find something to do. And he still does, even though he's retired. I have to go out and run him every day. I go play ball with him or, do something with him. Not every day, but I obviously try to, but there's some days that we miss and you can tell. I mean, he lets you know.
Have you ever had a situation where you could say your dog like saved your life, some call or something? Or has it been more just with the calls you've been on, has it been more dog just kind of done its job, take down a criminal, stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely certain situations where, like, I had no idea this guy was there, or maybe, when the dog found the person, he had a gun or a knife, so that if you found him, who knows how that would have gone. And that's kind of the purpose of him anyways, is to try to be that first line of defense or to kind of let you know before you get to that point, hey, there's somebody here. So then you can handle it differently and more tactfully so that you don't. So, I think in a sense, I think a lot of calls, they end up, at minimum, possibly saving our lives.
Yeah.
Right?
I feel like there's such force multipliers. If I'm just picturing myself as a bad guy, I wouldn't be a very good one, but...
No, you're too much of a...
Yeah, correct. But if I'm in a house, right, and I hear that dog barking, I'm like, you know what? I tried my best. I think we're done here. We don't need to go any farther.
Is, Go ahead.
So that's one of the things, especially in the canine world. I mean, when you see it, and even if you're on patrol, or, you know, you guys probably wouldn't experience it with this because you're not there at the time, but that's exactly the case. And I mean, I don't know the percentage, but a very high percentage of our calls that canine goes to, if people know there's a dog, they hear a dog, or, you know, you give the announcements of you're going to send your dog if they don't come out and surrender, very high percentage of people go, okay, I'm done, because they want no part of that. And that's the best part of what we do, right? It's, we just solve that problem without anything else happening.
Yeah, we had, I was a SWAT medic in my old job, and they had two dogs on their team, and one of them, I guess their teeth were too sharp. I guess there was like a, if their bite was going to like tear flesh as opposed to just puncture. So the dog ended up getting like a platinum grill.
Hell yeah.
I got pictures of it. I'll put it up on the
Patreon. Oh man.
Put it up on the Patreon. But yeah, I mean, it was cool to see the handler try and like control this thing that all it wanted to do was just like, it looked like all it wanted to do was murder. And I don't know. He had like little treats were hot dogs.
Yeah.
And he's like, I want this dog to either bite dicks or fingers. I don't know if that's true or if that's just a joke. But
That's probably a joke. I mean.
Yeah, okay.
Probably because it's a hot dog and kind of.
Yeah. I'm sure he loved it. But yeah, he had like this little piece of AstroTurf where when we would get in the stack, he'd throw the turf like right where he wanted the dog to sit. And then it was fascinating to watch you guys do what you do. I mean, what kind of training goes into that for both of you guys, right? Both of you guys have to get trained.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's essentially, as a new handler, you're basically learning how to be a handler through, well, several departments, you know, do it differently, but I know at Aurora, they do in-house training. So we had trainers that are cops that are also handlers, but they're certified trainers. And then they help us train the dogs, the whole unit. But once you get in the unit and you're a new handler, you also have to go through, you know, study material, you know, learn dogs, drives, traits, the history of canines, you know, case law. There's a bunch of different things that on that aspect that you have to learn as a handler, but then you also learn the actual practical side of it and learn the ins and outs of how to properly handle a dog, how to deploy a dog, when to deploy a dog, and they kind of go together, obviously. But that's usually 3 to 4 month process. I mean, 3 to 4 months of 40 hours a week, sometimes more, you know, starting from, you know, bonding with your dog to your basic and simple obedience, to then working into odors, you know, if they're a narcotics dog or if they're a explosive dog. You know, you learn how to teach your dog how to find and, you know, search and find those particular odors. And then you move into the bite work, you know, finding and apprehending bad guys. And it's about a 4 month process, like I said, of 40 hours a week plus. So and then obviously once you are up and running and, you know, you're certified and you're out there working the road, usually most units train as a unit once a week. It's usually on Wednesdays, and everybody gets together and you work on problems, problem solving, anything that you've seen over the, you know, last week or so of calls like, hey, my dog didn't do this, or hey, my dog was doing this and I don't understand why, and you kind of just, you know, work through it and try to figure out, you know, fixes. And yeah, and then obviously you do your normal standard trainings, and which you still do on a regular basis. I mean, you're doing obedience every day, sometimes multiple times a day. You know, you're doing other things throughout your work day, even though you're not specifically on a call or, you know, doing something specific, you're just out working with them. So it's a never ending process is what I'm getting at.
Has there ever been any cases of where the dog gets, you know, the use of the dog and it gets you, you know, excessive force, and the defendant can come back and say, yeah, he bit me too much, or you know, for what I did. I mean, there's probably some rules on when a dog can be used, right?
Yeah.
And then what happens if the dog just goes crazy? And
well, and that's, I would imagine that's happened before as far as, you know, depending on the situation and or the dog. You know, dogs have the same kind of potential, I guess, of going to that code black, you know, that, you know, we're humans, you know, they just
lose their shit.
Yeah. I mean, just you freak out and your mind and your body just takes over and you kind of lose control in a sense. Dogs kind of have that too. They can go into these certain chemicals or whatever it is that causes it to take over and they lose it. So, but there's been other cases where it hasn't been the dog that did that. It's, you know, just poor handling, guys deploying when they should be deploying, not removing their dog off of a bite fast enough, letting somebody just sit there and get
mauled,
you know, get chewed on by a dog. And it's, you know, and those are the things too, like everything else in policing that affect everybody.
Yeah.
Like those are things that's what the news puts on there.
Oh, of course.
You know, they don't put all the good apprehensions, the, you know, kind of going back to what you were talking about with, you know, not tearing flesh and just puncturing. Part of that is how you teach your dog to bite.
How do you teach a dog to bite?
Well, I mean, obviously a dog knows how to bite.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's just what they do and as animals. But it's the old school way is for dogs to grab and they kind of thrash and they pull. Mm-hmm. And that's what causes the tearing and the ripping and stuff like that. So I don't know how old this guy was or when he was doing his military handling, but that may be how he was taught back then, that particular dog. And that's why he would do some of those things that's just how he was taught. Whereas these days, the standard and the way we train dogs is to, you go into the bite and you drive, you don't pull, you drive forward so that you're staying on one particular area and they're holding essentially. They're not pulling, they're not, you know, so they're not thrashing. You don't want a dog. I mean, you may see a dog thrash here and there because that's just kind of what dogs do.
Yeah.
It's just part of their extinguishing the prey. It's their prey drive that comes out. You know, that's how they, you know, quote unquote, kill the prey. But it's a big game to them. You know, they don't know any difference. They don't know that I'm attacking a bad guy to apprehend him. It's a game to them. It literally is. You teach them how to play the game. And
well, they're trying to get either, what is it, play or food? Is there a reward or what? Is it usually play?
Yeah. So, I mean, essentially dogs understand pain and pleasure.
Okay.
Right. So to them, you want to manipulate those things to get what you want out of them. So to them, that's fun. That gives them pleasure to go down and bite and catch that prey, right? At the end of the day, I mean, they're also working for you as the handler because you help feed them, you help do all those things, and you also give them pleasure. At least you should, because
just you're building a relationship, right?
Yeah. Right. So if you're constantly making things unpleasurable for them, they're probably not going to work for you. They're going to be like, no. Or they're going to be too scared to do anything.
Do they kind of know when they're not at work anymore? Like, I feel like we are at a certain level of kind of yellow at work and then green when we're down at home. I mean, do the dogs have a capability of, hey, when this, because they wear vests and stuff, like when this vest comes off, I am now a home dog? Like, do they have that?
I think they do. I mean, I think there's several things that you can notice, and at least from my experience, like, and I think if you ask any other handler, they probably tell the same thing. They know when they get in that car, their mindset changes. They're potentially going to go out and get to find somebody, or they get to go, and whether that means they know they're going to go find somebody or they just know they're going to work. Right. I don't know. I don't think anybody knows truly what
they're thinking.
Right. What the thought process behind it. But, you know, it's one of those things where they know the difference between getting in that car, riding around, they get amped up, you know, they know the sirens, you know, because they realize usually sirens equal sirens and fast driving equals me getting out of the car and going to work.
Funny how they, I mean, our dogs, right? I mean, yours the same way, right? When they get close to home or they get close somewhere, they start perking up.
Yep.
Oh. Are they in a seatbelt?
No.
Like, if you're cruising around emergent, I would imagine they're getting to get tossed around. Like, are there any sort of restraint?
So, no, there's, obviously they have the cages.
Oh, okay.
It's not,
it's not like they're just in a back seat.
Yeah, they're not just in the back seat, okay. But they do slide around. I mean, it's just one of those things. I mean, they don't slide far, but it's,
yeah,
it's enclosed, and it's not like they're in this big area where they can just get thrown around and tossed around. But yeah, I mean, they sometimes they go for rides.
I have no doubt.
You know, we started playing softball together or against each other like 10 years ago or so.
I think it's, I come from the softball capital of the world, by the way, Chicago.
I don't know, Matt, if you've ever seen this guy throw a softball, but you probably haven't.
Imagine
probably don't want to either.
Unathletic throw you've ever seen in your
life. I wore sweatpants to Catholic school, so that just tells
me. Here's what I find hilarious. I went, we were teaching, or no, we were writing our book down in Arizona, and Tom's like, hey, I'm going to go play this baseball game. And I come to, you know, the field, and everyone.
Well, this is like a, this is a men's league, but it's with all my college buddies. So if I ever go down there, I kind of hop on and I'll go and just pitch a game, you know. So this isn't softball. This is actually, you know, it's decent baseball. Yeah. You know, some old minor league guys, a lot of college guys playing it, but
I mean, throwing
Jack
hard.
Off, Jack off over here shows up, and
I found it so hilarious that all these grown men were in uniform, like playing baseball together. I thought it was fucking hilarious.
Anyways, yeah. So he goes, hey, you know, like, have you ever had any when you're pitching, like, ever had any comebackers come at you?
I didn't say it like that. That's like a.
Has anybody ever hit the ball off you? I think that's what he said. In that game, I had 4 balls hit in the vicinity of me. I think I got. Two or three of them. But
pretty,
I mean, like,
impressive.
Hard comebackers, you know, ones where it's all instinct.
Yeah.
Like, you're never coming to a game again. You're an idiot. Yeah, but speaking of grown men in uniforms, I mean, the competitive softball world is a game of its own, too.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, you'll never be invited.
It's even more silly, honestly, but we still do it.
Well, but there is a little bit of a... I mean, who can have the flashy uniform thing is a softball thing that's kind of funny. Like, who can have the biggest play? I mean, what, one of the teams one time, weren't you the Pandas or what were you?
Oh, yeah. So that was, we were Damage Factory.
Damage Factory, and you had like Pandas on it.
And that was their logo.
Yeah.
The panda with the rifle.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. It's a pretty sweet logo. Yeah.
How'd you get into all that? I mean, did you play sports in college? And
Not college. I played in high school. And then just back home, you know, growing up.
Where are you from?
Shreveport, Louisiana.
There you go.
So, obviously, you know, played basketball, baseball, football. I mean, I've been blessed enough to be able to be fairly athletic. So I played multiple sports and, continued playing it afterwards. Got on with the PD down there at when I first started at 22, and I picked up on a team down there, and, you know, of course, I didn't care to play baseball, so I just picked up softball, and they've been playing it ever since.
What got you into the cop game?
I would say it's probably my grandpa. My grandpa was a cop back home. He retired as a Shreveport police officer, and that kind of got me intrigued to it. And then part of it was also just kind of not knowing what else to do. So I was like, well, I'll try this, see if it works, and if I enjoy it, and sure enough, I did.
What did you like about it? And do you still like that about it?
Well, obviously, yes and no, partially because of how things have changed over the years, particularly the last few years. But, it's changed a lot since then, too. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of things that we did back then that we don't do now. Some of it's good, some of it's not good. And it has kind of taken away some of the enjoyment. I mean, inevitably, our job is risky. It's dangerous. and you know that coming into it, right? Doesn't mean you go out and just do things willy-nilly and, you know, don't care. But taking away, you know, the pursuits, you know, some places are taking away foot chases because they're so worried about what could happen on these foot chases, right? It's like you have a responsibility to keep your community safe, and inherently that's going to be dangerous for you. If you can't accept that or do that, then you probably should find something else, right?
Where do you think it's going? I mean, obviously the pendulum in every career and everything seems to swing rather violently, but I mean, how much farther can we possibly go in that direction where, hey, we're going to do this hands-off policing and, you know, we're not going to do any more car chases and we'll pick them up later. Well, okay, well, what happens if they smoke somebody in the next intersection? Or, you know, for us, hey, if someone who we deem is capable of making their own medical decisions, even if they're bad, they say they don't want us there, we can just leave, even though that's not what's necessarily best for them. I mean, can it go much farther that way?
Well, I think you're kind of seeing the results of that. I think people are, because when all this stuff started, obviously we all kind of started pulling back and we're like, whether it be voluntarily or being told to, you know, we're like, hey, look, you know, this is how quote unquote society wants us to handle things. Okay, here you go. We're going to pull back and we're going to do the bare minimum. And you're seeing the high crime rates. You're seeing, you know, a lot of the stuff also comes in to your guys' side. You know, a lot of the drug use, the, you know, things that are side effects of us not.
Oh, they're teaching us to do searches.
Yeah, I mean,
no, serious? Right?
Well, yeah, we're going to,
yeah,
like.
You say that, but yeah, no, they're giving us videos on how to do a proper search. And it's like, what?
Like search of people or?
Search of somebody for weapons.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
You know, you no, like, not like clear, like clear house.
Not like a building search. I'm like, what?
No.
Well, we're going to calls that normally PD would go to, like domestic violence calls. And there's no cops. It's just us. And I'm like,
Well, that in itself is probably just lack of people, right? Like, you get so busy, like you guys end up beating us there because we're still en route or not even going yet because.
Right.
Short staff. Yeah.
But those DV calls are arguably one of the most dangerous even for you guys. Mm-hmm. And you're sending us in with no training and no protection.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I agree.
No, it's kind of, I don't know if that's the right.
But scenarios like that, right? It's, we're so busy because we're short staffed because of everything that's happened and nobody wants to be a cop anymore. And people are leaving in droves and, you know, and then because of that, you guys, you know, go to a call and you're like, well, this is dangerous for us. And it's damn near stupid to go in by yourselves. So then you guys have to make a decision or be told, hey, sorry, I understand there's a domestic going on. However, we're not putting our lives at risk. We have zero defense other than basically your hands, right? So, you know, it just doesn't make sense to go into that.
I think it's
going
to come to that.
So,
well, we had the defense of, hey, we are the good guys, right? That everyone liked us.
Right.
Now, we don't have that anymore. So right. Now we literally have no defense.
So what's going to happen is, and I think you're kind of seeing this already, is everybody just has to wait. And then in the meantime, people are getting hurt. People are getting killed. People are getting in situations where, you know, it could have been resolved and or prevented from happening. But because of these new laws, these new restrictions, however you want to view them, whether it be departmental, statewide, city, you know, policies, you know, procedures, laws, whatever, you know, they're starting to really affect the public. And now people are like, wait a minute.
This isn't what they thought this was supposed to do. Meanwhile, all of us that work in it are like, oh yeah, this is exactly what we predicted was going to happen. This is no surprise.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, I think it's starting to swing back the right way as far as people are waking up. They're realizing, you know, that you need cops, you need firemen, you need all these people because they actually do protect us. And maybe all those things that we're seeing on TV aren't as prevalent because they're not.
Right.
You know, they aren't as bad as they seem, because they're not. You know, there's a few here and there, don't get me wrong. And those people usually get dealt with, despite what people might see on the news. You know, there's a lot of times that cops do things like legitimately wrong and illegal, and you never even hear about it because they just get fired.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't make the news, doesn't, you know, none of that. But the people don't see that. So they think, well, it takes.
They're only getting fired because the news caught it.
Right.
They're thinking that's the only ones that get fired, right, or get, yeah, held accountable. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's one of those things where I think people are just slowly but surely waking up. So we'll see how far it ends up swinging back. It will never swing back to where it started.
Maybe it shouldn't.
I absolutely, yeah, agree. I mean, like I said, there's things that we learn over the years, and you evolve, and you change, and you deal with it. And a lot of times it's for the good.
Yeah.
You know, but sometimes it's not, but a lot of times it is. So we'll see what happens. I know me personally, I've still kind of been in that limbo mode of like, do I continue to stay in this, or do I find something else, or do I have a backup plan for just in case, you know, kind of thing. And
I think that's got to be every cop.
Oh yeah.
Right now that thinks that. And honestly, it's getting in the fire service too.
Oh,
you know, it's like,
no one wants
I need
to
a backup
job,
plan, because I mean, you know, there's some instances, and there's current events going on right now that firefighters are now, their lives are in jeopardy as far as jail time. So you have a lot of firefighters that are thinking, wait a minute, what? That is not what I signed up. No firefighter ever, right, signed up for that, because this is the first ever time it's happened.
Yep.
So backup plan, Craig. Not going to be professional softball for you.
It's dog trainer.
Dog trainer, yeah. Ability. You don't want him training your dogs.
No, dude, you should see my
dog. Yeah, you know what his dog did to me? You know what his dog did? His dog comes over and sees one of my son's chickens in the backyard, and he doesn't do any like canine, like go get the guy restrained. He rips its head off.
Yeah, so my dog's never seen a chicken ever, and she's a Siberian Husky. And Tom, I think you asked, like, hey, can we let the chickens out? I'm like, I guess,
no,
man.
No, so you're like, bring the dog over. I'm like, yeah, bring the dog over. My dog.
Oh, yeah.
Your dog. And so my son knows our dog, Chocolate Lab, super friendly. Like, he gets along with the horses. He gets along with the chickens, everything. And so he sees another dog come over, and he's like, yeah, I'm going to let the chickens out, and they can play with this new dog. And it was game on.
So I go inside, right? My dog's like, I watch it for the first little bit. I'm like, oh, things seem pretty chill out there. So Tom and I come inside, and then we hear his daughter let out this blood curdling scream. We run outside, and
dust
my dog,
and feathers everywhere.
My dog's like walking around, like all jacked up. You can see it like kind of shaking. And your poor son is holding this bloody bird. And my dog.
And he loved those things. He loves them, right?
Yeah.
And this is probably, he's probably 10 or 11 at the time.
Yeah.
I don't know. And ooh, broke his heart, man.
Yeah.
And suffered for about 2 days and then died. But yeah, no, yeah, you're not a canine cop.
I actually don't have, there's no backup plan for me.
Me and my buddy were talking about this the other day, not chickens and dogs, but just talking about the police world in general, how so you got the old school and you got the new guys who all they know is this, right? So in their minds, this is normal, right? They're like, what's the big deal? But you also have a hybrid, what we call a hybrid group.
Which is you, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That we were taught the old way. We've had to learn and evolve with the new changes, the things that have changed over the years. And now we're at this, like, whoa stage of, like, so there's a particular group, the hybrid group, that is very important, at least in our opinions, to policing in general. Because we're the guys who are teaching these new guys, but we also have the knowledge and skills of how it really should be,
right,
handled, as opposed to how they're being taught. And it's like, if you run all of us out of here, you're going to have nothing left other than this type of police officer. And this type of police officer, honestly, is not it's kind of, it's partially a mentality thing. It's a warrior mentality, which they've also tried to get rid of. They want you to be.
You know who hasn't gotten rid of the warrior mentality? The bad guys.
Correct. And they never will.
No.
Never will.
And they're gonna see that weakness. I mean, they're already seeing the weakness on the police side, or that dialing it back, and it's like, oh, I'm going for more now. Yep. You know?
Yep. So I mean, like, we were talking about how serious it is that things end up changing or get corrected soon, because once you lose a certain group of guys, there's nobody gonna be left to teach and to groom and to truly help these new guys understand what policing is about and how you need to be policing or handling things, right? So it'll be interesting.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
How much of society's issues do you think are a result of broken homes, though? You know, like criminals or people who just aren't leaving those productive lives that contribute to society, you know, not having fathers at home.
Yeah, it's obviously a huge part. I mean, I think you guys see it a lot too. But I mean, back home, it was the same thing. You know, high crime rate, and that's one of the nexuses, I guess, to each and every issue that you run into is, you know, it's they have no father, and or if there is a both parent home, they're never home because they're either, well, few of them were working, but they're either out doing their own thing, they're partying, literally the parents would drop their kids off at certain places, the skating rink or parks or, you know, certain places. They'd even drop them off at their buddies' houses so they can go party. And you'd see them, you know, downtown.
Man, that's just,
you know, and it's like
never growing up.
So they're not being parents.
Yeah.
Right. So it's either lack of parents as in numbers, or it's lack of parenting as in they're not home, they don't know what they're doing, or they just choose to do their own thing and let their kids just kind of grow up and do what they want to do. And those are the ones you deal with.
You encounter.
Yep.
Yeah.
What's the best way to get out of a ticket? Is there a good way?
Show your boobies.
Okay, so you don't have those qualities. All right. How about do you guys, when you pull over a firefighter?
Oh yeah.
Okay, two parts. You probably have a good firefighter story where you pulled over a guy and he can't stop telling you he's a fireman, right? There's got to be.
I actually don't have any of those stories. I actually don't have any stories of, you know, the civilians trying to pull stuff, like, other than you're like your typical, oh, I had to go to the bathroom or, you know, or some other lie that you're like, all right, none of the like females like trying to show you things or hitting on you, or, you know, I've never actually had that, at least that I've noticed anyways. Yeah. But, never had a firefighter story either, so.
No? Oh, man.
They're out there, man.
Do the plates actually help?
Do
you guys look at them? Do you look at them and be like, oh, okay, you know, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, obviously.
Depends on the infra. Obviously, if it's you're breaking a huge law, you're getting.
Right, and that's how it is with cops, too. Like, you know, we try to show professional courtesy. At least I do. Most people do. But obviously, there's certain things that you can't. Can overlook, you know, if you're driving drunk and
obviously,
you know, especially if you're in a crash, you know. But I will say, I mean, you know, me personally, this goes back to the old school mentality of policing, which I still firmly believe in. People make mistakes, right? You know, whether it be driving mistakes just in life, and sometimes people make the wrong decision and they get in their vehicle and they drive intoxicated, right? Yeah. Doesn't mean you have to always hammer them for it. Granted, it's against the law. There's a lot of things that are against the law that we don't address the same way, right? There's a thing called discretion. So, I mean, I over my years, I have done this for people that I know, people that I don't know, cops, firefighters. I mean, I'm sure there's probably at least one person in every aspect of life that I've come across, and I've been like, all right, you've obviously been drinking. You shouldn't be driving. However, I want to cut you a break. park your car. We're going to park your car over here, call you a ride, and
get out of here
and be out of here, right? So these days you do that and you're, it's just like, oh my God, you did what?
Yeah.
You know, now you're in trouble, and it doesn't matter who it is. It could be a, but I'm like, I would do it for a regular citizen as much as I would for a firefighter, a cop, or whoever, right? And I have done it for,
well, it's like, if you, I'm sure part of it is that you encounter them and they're respectful. Mm-hmm. They take accountability. I mean, I would think that that goes a long way. And you're like, yeah, it's not just the canned answer. Oh, two beers. It's like, you know, I was here. I had, you know, this cocktail and then a beer, and that was at 8 p.m. and now it's 10, and I live right over there, and I'm going home. And
right,
you know, park your car, get out of here, man.
Right.
You know,
that's it. Yeah.
Instead of, I'm sure you pulled him over. It's like, I'm drinking. What do you want? Why are you pulling me over? I didn't do anything. Well, you almost hit two cars. And now you're trying to tell me that I'm in the wrong, you know?
Yeah. Or you actually do hit cars, you know, and you crash. Yeah. That's,
and that, I mean, that decision's been made.
Correct.
You know?
But correct. They still probably want to get out. Oh, why are you guys here? All that debris in the road?
Wasn't me. Prove it.
And like the answer, I mean, the issue with that is that's probably not the most politically correct answer or comment, you know, that say admin or whoever would want to hear from you. But in reality, to me, that's treating people like humans, right? Like,
and if you get a DUI, for a lot of people, your life's over. You're going to get fired. You're going to, and granted, it's their fault. They deserve that. But if you can do what you did, you can still, hey, I'm going to teach you a lesson. You're 18 and,
right,
you know, don't fuck this up, dude. You know?
Because, I mean, we're cops, right? We're supposed to find the people who are breaking the law. And they're supposed to be held accountable for it. But that doesn't mean it's always like a
right
roll with an iron fist. Yeah. And, you know, we're going to give you everything you have coming to you all the time. And it's just, I mean, to me, you have to find a good mix, right? It's certain people, certain occasions. And I say people, I mean, like if I were to stop you and you were driving drunk, and maybe you're like, nah, I don't, like on the border of like, right. But I pull up your driving history.
Yeah.
I'm like, DUI.
Different story.
Okay. You know, but you have a clean record. You've never had a DUI. Maybe you never even had a ticket. I mean, we come across people who have never had tickets before. And I typically won't even write them a ticket because I'm like, you've at least never been issued a ticket, right?
Right.
You've probably been stopped before, but it's very rare because usually the more times you get stopped, the higher chance you have of getting a ticket. If you haven't already had one. So why would I now want to start messing with you and your driving record? And, you know,
right. Just made a mistake.
There's just certain circumstances. I think you have to take each one individually and go, all right, this is just this particular case, unless there's some other sort of history behind it.
Right.
You ever had quotas?
No.
You got to write tickets. There are places that have it, right?
They're not supposed to. It's my understanding that's against the law to have quotas. And that's a, you know, that's a federal law that departments cannot have quotas.
That's now, good. All right.
What I will say is I have known and heard and also seen specific departments doing something like that. Like, you know, our standard is you're going to have X amount of tickets per day.
Yeah, okay.
You know, they don't call it a quota. They don't force it onto you. However, if you don't meet those standards, you're probably not going to be in that position very long. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, kind of on a side note, but isn't like Mountain View one of those places? Because they get a lot of guys who fired and...
I think I've heard that name as far as like being involved in something like that before. Yeah. So that wouldn't surprise me. It's either Mountain View or... Well, is that over there by Overlook?
Lakeside. Over by like Arvada, Wheat Ridge area.
Oh, yeah. I don't know about that. I'm thinking of like off of 70 towards Overlook Mountain.
Lookout, you mean?
Or Lookout, yeah.
Well, I mean, it's off 70. It's like before you go into the mountains.
Maybe that is the same place, though.
Yeah. Nice, man. Well, man, I don't know. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah. It was actually good. Cool.